Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Not many American cities can boast about moose meandering along neighborhood streets or offer salmon fishing so close to downtown you could practically cast a line out the window of high-rise office buildings. The state's largest urban center is celebrating its 50th anniversary right now, but the story of Anchorage is still being written, and it's worth discussing what this city should aspire to be in the next 50 years. Anchorage at 50 and the path to the future is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Consider a gift of stock to Alaska Public Media. You may avoid paying capital gains tax and receive a deduction. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/stock or contact your financial advisor.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello. From Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. To me, Anchorage is one of the best-kept secrets in the country. Yes, it's distant from other American cities, but our incredibly diverse population, our trails and wooded green spaces, our coastline, our glorious mountain vistas, and the convenience of city life while being just minutes away from incredible wilderness where fishing, hunting, and berry picking are waiting make Anchorage a really cool place to live. But there are challenges. Costs are higher than down south, housing is tight, and again, there's that distance from the rest of the country. We can't move the city, but what can and should Anchorage strive to be in the coming decades? What should this far north city look like in 2075? Here to give us their perspective on the way forward for a thriving city is Anchorage Mayor Suzanne LaFrance. Also with us today is Anchorage's Chief of Police Sean Case and Assembly Vice Chair and West Anchorage Representative Anna Brawley is in the studio with us. All of you, welcome so much. It's so great to have people in the studio. So thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Mayor, start us off here. In 1975, there were about 165,000 people here. Today, Anchorage is home to about 284,000. But we have lost residents in recent years. What do you think could really help turn that around again for the future?
Well, you know, Lori, I totally agree. This is a really cool place to live. And pardon me, my administration is focused on building our future and setting the foundation for the next 50 years. We want to be a safer, stronger, more affordable, vibrant place to live. And so we've been focused on three main areas, and that is building more housing, improving public safety, and encouraging economic development and quality of life. And I'm really excited to be here with the chief, who obviously has a big role in the public safety piece, and also with Vice Chair Brawley, because the Assembly has been really great partners in this work.
All right, Wynn, we'll drill down on all those areas as we move through the hour. So, Vice Chair Brawley, what's the most important thing you think the city needs to prioritize now to have a thriving community in the decades ahead? Give us sort of the big picture snapshot, and then we'll drill down going forward.
Sure. Since I got elected a couple years ago, and even before that, have been really focused on housing. I think that is our biggest issue in the city, not just because we need folks to afford to have a place to live, but we need quality housing. We need neighborhoods that people want to live in. We need options for people throughout their lifespan, you know, from whether they're starting a family all the way to when they're, you know, maybe empty nesters and looking for a place to downsize. And I really think that housing is not just about where individual people live. It's also really part of our economy. So if you are spending most of your money on housing, you're not going to have extra money to spend at those local restaurants and things like that. So affordability is really a huge issue. And it's also a big fiscal issue for our city overall. When our city was growing, that's when we were able to have the funds, have the tax base in order to build the roads that we need, to provide the services that we need. And we haven't been building as much as we were before. And so we still have all those same costs. And so we have to find a way to keep paying for that and maintaining what we have. And so building more housing is part of our overall, the overall picture of our economic development as well.
Absolutely. Makes sense. And Chief Case, public safety concerns were one of the main drivers of the municipality being established in its current form 50 years ago. When you think about the future from a, through a public safety lens, what are you most focused on?
Well, I think it, the first thing that we need to remember when we talk about Anchorage is how different we are from the rest of the country. You know, we, you know, not just our climate and our separation from our friends in the lower 48, but when you go to other cities across the country, you know, they have mutual aid that's available to them that's not available to us. There are suburbs that offer various different opportunities to include housing. As Member Brawley mentioned, in Anchorage, we use the word hub, and that couldn't be truer. We're kind of where everything happens. And so when we look at public safety in the future, I think one of the things that I always like to remind us is Anchorage residents typically like to say we like to solve our own problems. We like to rely on ourselves. And when we go outside of Alaska to try to find solutions to problems that we have here locally in Anchorage, we have to remember that those outside solutions, those are very different places and you know, different tax bases and things like that. So as Alaskans, as we move forward with public safety, we need to find solutions that are specific to Anchorage and that are going to solve problems in the future and that are sustainable. These, you know, grants that we apply for example, that's going to solve a problem for the next 1 to 3 years and then go away and we can't sustain it, means that we're going to find ourselves in the same place we were before the grant. So long-term solutions to deal with some of the specific problems of Anchorage.
All right. Thank you for getting us started there. And Vice Chair Brawley, turning back to you for a second, you're a planner by training. And when you look at the layout of Anchorage, how does it stack up to other cities? And what would you change if you could? What would that look like?
Sure. That's a good question. So we are certainly a young city. So we are, of course, older than 50 years. You know, there were things before 1975 when the Muni was created, but we are also a very young city. And so that means in terms of planning, planning perspective, we were built essentially when everyone was using cars. And so that's why we have very wide roads. You know, we're certainly built to accommodate cars. And I'm not picking on cars. It's just true that when you go to a place like Boston or you go to cities in Europe or really most other places in the world, those cities are older. They were built for people on horses or on foot or maybe a cart. And so when you look at those narrow streets or you just look at more kind of inherently walkable places, we were built after that. I think that the exceptions to that are some of our older neighborhoods, Government Hill, downtown, Fairview, you know, South Addition, places with grids. So you can see kind of the oldest parts of the city based on the fact that they are the most walkable or they're built kind of for that human scale. And so I think, you know, not to say that we're going to get rid of cars, right? People do need to drive around. But I think to the extent that we've built our city so much with these high capacity, high speed roads, you can get really all the way across town very quickly. But that's a challenge when you're trying to get people to slow down, to spend time, to walk from one business to another, to walk in their neighborhood. And so I think if I could go back, I certainly would have narrowed some of those roads or at least made them a little bit more pedestrian or bike friendly to slow folks down and to make them experience the city more.
All right. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about the future of Anchorage. The city is celebrating its 50th anniversary right now, and we're talking about the next 50 years with Anchorage Mayor Suzanne LaFrance, the Chief of Police, Sean Case, and Anchorage Assembly Vice Chair and West Anchorage Rep. Anna Brawley. We know that housing is a big constraint for people who want to move here or move into different housing, as was referenced. Talk about the 10,000 homes in 10 years and how you see that coming to fruition beyond zoning code changes and property tax relief for home builders. What else can be done to incentivize more affordable home building?
Well, we launched the 10,000 homes in 10 years as a bold plan to get more housing built. And as you mentioned, Lori, it does include cutting red tape, making it easier to build here by streamlining processes around zoning and around requirements. And we've done a lot of that work with the assembly. The tax incentive for multifamily housing, I believe, is something that is very significant and was grateful, you know, to have the partnership with and support of the assembly in bringing that forward. And what, you know, the data and analysis showed us that in order to ensure that multifamily projects could even pencil out, there needed to be a tax break associated. And so we've implemented that, and we have also seen that we are on track to double the number of multifamily permits from last year. And so we're seeing some good indicators that's working. Beyond that, too, we're looking at ways we can engage in partnerships, bring municipal assets like our Heritage Land Bank land. We have an RFP out right now for the archive site near Cuddy Park. And there's a lot of openness around what that can look like. And so we're really looking at, you know, all the ways that we can have partnerships and work with folks to move projects forward. I will add, too, we had a really great convening last week of the faith communities. And there are a number of faith communities who have land, who want to see, you know, housing projects developed. And so we're going to help convene that group and connect them with folks who can help them identify next steps and what kind of project would be good. So we're looking at all areas, and the partnership piece is a big part of it.
Yeah, that sounds like there's some a lot of movement on many fronts there. In addition to those faith community partners, what about organizations such as the Alaska Mental Health Trust and the land that they have? There's My colleagues have heard me speak about this so many times. There's a big chunk on the corner of Northern Lights and Bergah that belongs to the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Nice big open chunk in between the schools. Are you working with them? That just seems like the perfect place for a whole lot of housing right in that piece of land right there. What do you know about that?
Well, I don't have specifics around that one to share, but we are talking with a number of folks from the university to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to, as I mentioned, faith communities and private developers. And so I'm making a note to find out what kinds of opportunities are potentially associated with the land there.
Yeah, thank you. Chief Case, you mentioned how unique and different Anchorage is from other cities. How does that complicate your work and planning for public safety? And how are you thinking about addressing those challenges in the next few decades?
Well, I think it's first, it's important to look at what law enforcement has done over the previous 50 years, and not just with the Anchorage Police Department, just historically. And if you really look down at what law enforcement does, it's kind of been the same thing for the last 50 years. And particularly when you look at crime trends around the country, and certainly here in Anchorage as well, we see that our crime has stayed relatively even over the last 20 years. Professor Merstall with UA did a presentation last session with in Juneau and talked about that very point. And so we're doing the same thing over and over again, and we're seeing the same results in law enforcement as it responds to crimes. Mm-hmm. And so as we move forward over the next 50 years, we really have to change our approach to how we respond to crime. And, you know, a good example is community policing. And we've been talking about community policing since 1995. And everybody says they want community policing here locally as well as around the country. And then when you ask them, what does that mean? And you would think after all these years that someone would all be able to rattle off a definition of what that looks like, but yet nobody can define it. And that's because police departments haven't truly invested in what that looks like. And as I mentioned in my first comment, they haven't invested in a way where it's going to, you know, survive the test of time. And so that's really what we need to move forward in, a model that's sustainable. And it starts with the culture within the police department. You know, one of the failures of community policing has really been police departments and their inability to adopt the recommendations and ideas from the communities that they're trying to impact. And if we're not adopting those ideas from those communities that are suffering from some of the things historically that's been going on for decades and decades, we're not helping them solve their problem. Our response alone, which generally is getting tough on crime and putting people in jail, isn't actually solving the problem. And so it's not just the culture within the police department, it's also the culture within our community. And, you know, I think we're already are well ahead of the curve. You know, you see some of the responses that we have with the media, with our elected officials, and with the community members on how we deal with some challenging issues like behavioral health, substance misuse. And, you know, if you go back 10 or 15 years ago, we were very split across the board on how we respond to that. Whereas today, we've all started to come together and understand the benefit of criminal justice system isn't the answer. Treatment is a piece of the solution. Certainly enforcement is a piece of the solution as well, but it's not a one-size-fits-all response that's going to help us move forward when it comes to public safety. And so getting everybody on the same sheet of music and making those cultural changes within the police department and the community, that becomes a big challenge because it takes a long time to move culture.
And drill down a bit there, the impact team, community policing, police officers, community service members who are unarmed but have training, what will their duties be and how will these teams, when will they start doing their work?
So the impact team is going to be made up initially of three patrol officers and six community service officers. Our community service officers, as you mentioned, are not, they're unarmed police department employees. They have some low-level enforcement abilities, so they can enforce some infractions. And they'll be teamed together for the first time that we've ever done it within the Anchorage Police Department to have a, kind of a multidisciplinary between sworn and non-sworn members of the department. And long-term, each member of the impact team will be assigned to an area of town. And so each community council, which is the easiest way to kind of explain what that looks like, will have one member of the police department that's not just assigned to that beat during a certain shift, but that is responsible for that area. So think about the calls for service that patrol officers go on right now that are really longer term. It's a problem location, it's a drug house, it's a business that's having difficulties, it's a camp that's causing problems for that community. Patrol goes and they deal with the immediate problem and then they move on to the next call. This team will have the ability to really anchor a response for that community. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're going in the future. However, over the next several months, we're really gonna focus on a couple of neighborhoods that have really had some long-term challenges that we've seen year after year, decade after decade, and to devote some time to those communities to build that relationship, to build that trust. You know, it's no surprise to anyone that there's a lack of trust in some of these communities. And we really, we're reaching out to those communities right now and asking, what do you want from your police department? And we're gonna be there no matter what. And we're gonna provide police services on all ends of the spectrum, not just the enforcement end, but also kind of what I like to refer to that social service piece. Yeah. We're gonna offer all those things. But as time goes on and trust builds, those communities are gonna come to us and say, hey, you know, we're having a problem with this and we think this will work. And now what law enforcement traditionally likes to do is go, hey, you stay in your lane, we'll operate in our lane. And what we're gonna do is we're gonna try
You're
that.
We're gonna merge those lanes.
We're gonna merge those lanes and we're gonna try that. And if it doesn't work, it's not gonna leave us any worse than where we're at right now. It can only get better. And so, and we're gonna see where that leads us. And I can tell you with a lot of confidence, we're gonna be a better place when we adopt that method of policing than where we're at right now.
Listening to the community and what they need.
It's a crazy idea.
Vice Chair Brawley, when moving, I want to drill down on some of those other community policing ideas as the hour goes on, Chief Case, but let's talk a little about the economy. When you think about the economy of the future for Anchorage, what do you think that could look like? Large manufacturing has never worked because of our distance from materials, but do you think that could change in the future based on what the needs are, such as assembly of products from where materials come from other countries? Maybe China ships parts here and Alaskans assemble goods for American consumers. Do you think there's a possibility for that type of economic growth here?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the greatest strengths that Anchorage has is our diverse economy, especially compared to the state as a whole. We are the hub for services. We have a lot of the specialty health care. We have, government and private sector. And we do know that we are heavily reliant, like the rest of the state, on resource extraction and production. But we're seeing a lot more kind of diverse activity there. So I think in the future, it is hard to predict because, our economy is changing so much and the federal landscape is changing. So maybe a year ago, I would have said we should be all in on renewable energy. I still think that's true. And also the funding landscape for that is changing, at least for the short term. And so I think we're going through a lot of turmoil right now, forces kind of beyond our control. But I do think with the ability to, for example, remote work, folks can live anywhere and do the work that they need to do. So we could certainly be a destination for that. I do think specialty manufacturing, production of certain foods, right? There's kind of niche areas that we can occupy and really take advantage of. And we are, as all the billboards by the airport says, the crossroads of the world. So certainly transportation, shipping is going to continue to be a huge driver of our economy. The Anchorage Airport is in my district, and I know that is one of the biggest economic activities out there. So I think there's opportunities, but again, I think we're in a very tumultuous time, and so it's hard to predict, or it's hard to put your bets where things are going to shake out from that.
Do you see potential for attracting Silicon Valley types up here? Could Anchorage in Alaska be a place for tech bros?
I think that's a good question, and it's hard to say. You know, it's possible that we are already a destination for that, at least on a small scale. I've been to other cities recently. Denver, for example, has significantly transformed how it looks, how its buildings look, because of that influx of new money. So I think it is a double-edged sword, of course. When folks with a lot of money show up, they can buy housing, not just for themselves, but as investment properties. And so I think we've seen in other cities, you know, that word gentrification can happen as well. And so I think it's a lot of opportunity. But I think also, again, if we don't get our housing production jump-started, then we will be stuck with more people trying to compete for the same housing. Mm-hmm. And so growth can have, as I said, it's a double-edged sword a lot of times.
Mayor, Alaskans get hives about taxes. Outside of property taxes, Anchorage residents currently pay no sales tax. There's no state income tax. There is an alcohol tax that helps with some services. But to build great new things, keep up with infrastructure, maintenance, and roads, what do we need for the future? I know that Assemblymember George Martinez introduced a 1% sales tax proposal. Do you see that? And what other ideas are out there that you think we're going to have to put in place to help build that future?
Well, this is a great time to take a look at what we need fiscally and what kind of plan we need to put in place to take care of what we have, and also to ensure that we have the amenities here in Anchorage that really contribute to it being this very special place. And I know that this is a real important topic to Vice Chair Brawley, and we've had some, you know, good conversations around, you know, what it is that we need here. We have seen basically more than a reduction, pretty much the elimination of funding from the state in the way that we once had it here, right? That we look at Project 80s and the PAC and our ice rinks and some of these really great amenities in our community. You know, how are we going to take care of what we have? We have an issue with infrastructure, right? We've had conversations around even like a stormwater utility. We've got about $1 billion in infrastructure needs. And a lot of times when, you know, you do road projects, that's when you can make some of those upgrades. But we have a lot of unmet needs in our community as far as our things and what we need to take care of, and very limited ways of paying for those things. And so we really do need to take a hard look at, you know, what are we willing to do? And at the same time, recognizing that it's expensive to live here. And in that conversation around sales taxes, you know, property tax relief comes up, and finding the right balance that people will support is important. I think it's just, it really is such a great time to have this conversation, not because of, you know, our needs being great and things being, you know, fluctuating at the state and definitely federal level, but because we're reflecting on ourselves as a municipality. And it's good to keep in mind that it took three times, right, for the munification vote to succeed. And what it did was unite a community of communities. And that diversity is still here, right? Geographically, we go north of Portage to Ingram Creek, or south of Portage to Ingram Creek, and then north of that first bridge to Reflection Lake. there are a lot of different communities in that area, and folks have different ideas about what a livable community means and how they're willing to pay for it and what they're willing to pay. So I'm excited to have that conversation.
Yeah, so the current proposal would not offer property tax relief because it's not the 3% tax that was proposed in
right.
the past. It's a 1% tax. It would support infrastructure, housing, a housing trust, behavior and mental health. Do you think that 1% is small, but do you think that that is the type of proposal that could eventually get some kind of support? Or do you think it would be more attractive, based on what you're hearing from Anchorage mm-hmm. residents, to have maybe a seasonal sales tax? So it's just like, hey, hit the tourists, mm-hmm. but not us all
sure.
year round.
Yeah, and in those conversations around seasonal sales taxes, there is a significant investment just to even implement a tax, mm. right, that we'd need to make. And so I think a model around like a base tax of like whether it's 2 cents a dollar and then ratcheting it up for a period of time to make it seasonal, or to do like they do in Wasilla, you know, to build or do certain projects is a consideration. I think that any proposal will need to be broader, that it would need to include property tax relief. We do rely very, very heavily on property taxes in our community. And I think that it would need to include some of those funds to go towards our basic government services, especially around public safety. And then also for some of these potentially exciting capital projects too. But finding that sweet spot that really meets the needs of our community and also is something that a majority of voters will support is the key.
Mm-hmm. Before we take our first break here, Mayor and Vice Chair Brawley, we hear often that zoning is a huge issue for building more housing. What is the evidence of that beyond builders saying it's too restrictive? Does Anchorage zoning, or how does Anchorage zoning compare with other northern cities that have earthquake concerns? And how does complex zoning actually stop construction?
I think the professional planner should take the first okay. pass on this one.
Yeah, I can. Thanks for bringing up zoning, one of my favorite topics. I think there's two answers. One is within the planning profession, I think every generation, right, professions go through these self-reflections or like Chief Case was saying with policing, right? Are we, if we continue to do what we're doing, is it achieving the results that we want? In the planning profession, I think there's a huge recognition that restrictive zoning has created, particularly on the West Coast or just cities that got fully built out in the last 50 years or so, that it's created challenges, right? If you carve up all the land into single family homes, where are you going to put new housing, right? When we run out of land or run out of the easy land. And so I think a lot of cities are really coming to that reckoning and saying, you know, where, if we want all these new residents to be coming in or just residents who are looking to find housing, where do we go? And then on top of that, I think Anchorage has had the challenge of what I've called the pendulum. So back in the oil boom days, we built a whole lot of housing for relatively cheap, very fast, not very well built necessarily. Even houses that you would think, you know, maybe $500,000 home at the time doesn't have insulation in it. There's all kinds of stories like that.
Yikes.
And so then in order to not continue that, we put really good building codes in place. We put a lot of zoning in place to really try to say we want better forms of development. However, I think the pendulum has swung too far the other way where we've said, you need to build this exact thing the way we want it. We really want great neighborhoods, but we have made it too difficult to build. The process takes a long time. There's too many points at which you can say no. The restrictions themselves are very difficult to meet. We have a solar access menu, for example, that's really hard to actually build a building that meets those requirements. Mm-hmm. And so I think on top of kind of the bigger discussion about zoning in Anchorage in particular, we need to roll back some of these very specific rules that we put in place in order to allow things to get built.
All right, we'll pick it up and continue that discussion about Anchorage's future and what it's going to look like in another 50 years as Talk of Alaska continues statewide after this break.
Hey, I'm Rick Steves. I've traveled all over the world and connected with so many fascinating people, and I'm looking forward to my visit to Alaska to share the lessons from my experience. Come see me at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium on October 16th for Travel as a Political Act. Tickets at alaskapublic.org/events.
So we were talking about zoning, and Mayor, last night the Anchorage Citizens Coalition sent an email criticizing the planning and zoning process, in part stating the Transit Supportive Development Overlay Ordinance is an assembly and housing club creation that would allow tall, bulky commercial and residential buildings to sprout up willy-nilly among more than 30,000 one- and two-family residential lots through much of the bowl. They wrote, if you voted for Mayor LaFrance, let her know we need her to return land use planning back to the professionals and get some real housing solutions. Talk about what you think needs to happen to create more housing without upsetting neighborhoods and how to communicate that.
Yeah, and you know what we're seeking to do here is to increase housing where there's already infrastructure to support it, to develop areas and support housing growth where it makes sense. And I know that, you know, the public process is such a key piece of this. People love their neighborhoods. Anchorage is special. And we want to ensure that, you know, some of those qualities, a lot of those qualities endure. And so I understand, you know, the concerns and where folks are coming from. Because, again, they love their neighborhoods and these are really special places. At the same time, we need to change, and we have got to make it easier to build housing. We need a lot more housing. You know, 10,000 homes in 10 years is based on the idea that we need 1,000 new or rehabilitated units. We have a lot of housing stock that's going offline or should go offline because it's old and, you know, not habitable in some cases. So we've been focusing on having a very robust public process around, you know, this particular issue, as well as just zoning and these kinds of changes in general, and really encourage members of the public to provide feedback, to engage. And we're making changes along the way, too, with assembly partners who are sponsoring some of these ordinances and really being responsive to the concerns and the needs of our community. So I just thank everyone for engaging. Keep engaging. This is part of what it means to be a community, right? As we have to wrestle our way through these things with respect and support of each other.
And I know, Vice Chair Brawley, you have to leave us in about 10 minutes, so I want to get a question into you here. You appreciate one of my favorite features of Anchorage, the glorious trail system. I came from rural people, and living in the city was a really daunting consideration for me, but the trails have kept me happy and in touch with nature right in the middle of the city. When you think about that system today and think about the future, do you imagine that other cities will look at Anchorage and say, hey, they really got that right. We should have done the same thing.
Yeah, I think certainly not only would cities do that, but I think they have done that. I've talked to a number of folks who come to Anchorage and are just amazed by how you can, you know, go out your back door and go under the trail system or go to a beautiful park, whether it's wooded or things like that. Other cities obviously have parks, but a lot of cities were really built out before really the public realized how valuable that is. So in some cities, for example, Chicago, there's a lakefront trail that goes from the top to the bottom of the city along Lake Michigan. But other than that, trying to carve those places out from places that are already built is very difficult. So in other cities, you'll see rails to trails converting old railroad corridors. And so I'm very grateful to the planners who came before me who really valued and fought for putting those trails in place. So we know, for example, the Coastal Trail at the time, not not everybody supported that. Currently, right now, there's a few folks who don't support the Fish Creek Trail connection. But I think once these trails are built, the value of them speaks for themselves, including, honestly, property value of the folks who own property along there, too. So it's important to remember that sometimes opposition up front turns into support afterwards. And I will make one other point on the TISDO ordinance or transit-supported corridors. I'm not a sponsor of that. I'm following it through the process. But I think it is interesting. It's really raising the question, what did we mean in our comprehensive plans, which were created back in the 2000s and then more recently in 2017, I believe, our land use plan? What did we mean when we said we wanted the most density near transit corridors and in town or neighborhood centers? That is what our plan calls for. So really the question is not so much, is this a good idea, but really, is this the right idea to implement what's in our comprehensive plan? And I think it's taken a while for us to get back to implementation of that plan, but I think that's really the question, is if not this ordinance as it's written, how do we increase density in these areas? Again, balancing with the interests of the neighborhoods who have gotten used to their neighborhood looking a certain way.
Absolutely. Getting back to the trail system, mm-hmm. Mayor, your thoughts on the value of this urban trail system in Anchorage and its opportunity to enhance life in the city, especially for families who live in apartments.
It is truly a glorious trail system, and I love it too. You know, a couple weeks ago, my mom and daughter and I were out and we biked the Moose Loop, and it was phenomenal. And it's just incredible to move through this urban wildland interface, you know, just a few miles from where you live. It really is remarkable. And just one of the areas and ways that it so enhances our quality of life here. And in that time, I saw people of all ages, young families, and you know, you go by parks and everything too, out and enjoying Anchorage. And that is something that we need to protect, we need to take care of, and continue to enhance.
Chief Case, you may see this a little differently. Yes, the trails are nice. Many are well lit in the winter, which I am really grateful for. But there's a lot of wooded areas that could be dangerous for people walking alone or areas where it's easy to hide bad behavior. What do you think about the challenge of public safety and the trails here, especially in future years? When new lights, city lights were going in, I thought that there were CCTV cameras on some of those lights because I would see red lights flashing. And I thought, oh, they must have installed cameras on those. I don't know if that's true or not, but I wonder do you think that we need something like that in the future going forward, more cameras in places where, yes, it's beautiful to be able to walk through those wooded areas, but there could be some concern about safety.
So I think first it's important to point out about our trail system is the majority of our trail system in our public spaces that you can hike and bike and walk and take dogs and all that sort of fun stuff. Very safe, not like you're not seeing some of the problems that people think are across the entire trail system. There's not homeless camps along most of our trail systems. Right. And so very safe, and you know, you're in the outdoors. And it looks and feels like it. You can hear water running in the background. You don't hear cars. So, you know, that we do have an excellent trail system that so many people in Anchorage get to enjoy every day. And that is extremely unique in Anchorage versus other cities. They can try to copy us, but they're not going to come close to what we have in our backyard.
That's right.
There are no closed circuit TV or video technology that's on our trail system right now. Now, we have been having conversation for the last several months of certain areas or pockets of the trail system where there is concern from some of our community members that frequent the trail, some safety concerns about putting cameras up in some of those areas. And there's a couple layers to that conversation. The first thing is generally across the board in Anchorage, we don't like having any sort of monitoring technology of any kind, and I'll use
those
monitoring.
Independent Alaskans.
That's right, and so we all understand that and appreciate that. And I think there's a little bit of that in all of us, even if we are supportive of things like that. And so the conversation has to have a little bit of a runway building up to, hey, we're going to put cameras in certain areas mm-hmm. so that we can make sure that we're all safe and we're comfortable using those areas of the trails. The second thing is we have to look at infrastructure, which we already mentioned, and the ability to integrate technology and new technology. It's not as simple as just putting a camera where there's no electricity. where cell service may be poor in certain pockets of those areas, or hardwiring that technology in. There's different prices associated for each one of those things, and putting that technology in takes time as well. But I think where you're going to see us going is we're going to have some pilot projects that we have in a couple areas of the trail system in the next couple of years or sooner. I don't want to put a real short time frame, and then the expectation is we'll have it in the next couple of months. But trying to use different technology that's a little bit easier to put up and utilize using cellular technology and some of the existing electricity that's in some of these trails, so that we can power the cameras and first of all see if it's going to bring the feeling of safety, because that's sometimes very different than whether or not you're safe. And if there are any incidents that occur during those time frames or those areas of the trail where we do have cameras, if those cameras are going to be able to be utilized to try to solve those crimes and collect evidence.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we take our second break, I want to go to the phones, and I promise I did not ask this person to call in, but Lauren in Anchorage is bringing up one of my favorite topics to discuss, which is about the Northway Mall building. Lauren, hello.
Hi. Yes, thank you for the show. I was wondering why they couldn't build a mall on the ground floor and have apartments like 6 stories high above it and have it for multi-income rentals.
Lauren, thank you for calling with that question, because I live in that neighborhood. I used to shop at that car store. It's only a few blocks from where I live. I miss all of the great things that were going on over there. And I'm grateful that a business has moved back in, but it would be so great to see a whole lot more going on there in that enormous area, such a huge sprawling parking lot. I've had visions of, oh, there could be green spaces and gardens and play areas and housing and mixed retail. Is there anything afoot with that building, that whole big complex that's over there beyond, they've cleaned it up quite well and closed off, took out some sections, but anything afoot there before we take a break?
I can't speak to what their specific plans are, but I do know the Northway Mall has come up a number of times in the last couple of years. One big challenge it has is it's right on the glide path for Merrill Field. And so in terms of what you can build there, it is a challenge, because there's rules often, like so many things, there's invisible rules that you can't see when you're looking at a piece of property. And that's one of the challenges. So it doesn't mean you can't put something there, but it means it can't be too high.
Couldn't be 6 stories.
And it maybe shouldn't have folks living there just because of the impact, the runway impact threat. I think bigger picture too, a lot of folks look around and say, this vacant piece of land or this underutilized piece of land, what's going on there? Why isn't somebody building on it? I think one thing to look at is what are the strings attached to that property? There might be restrictions on it. There might be limitations from a prior development, or there might be environmental issues. It might have wetlands, or it might be contaminated, or it might just be that the owner doesn't have the money to build something there and they're not willing to sell it. And so I think it's a challenge. Certainly we want to see those properties come back into productive use, but often there's reasons why they're like that, and then there's some barriers to getting there, which is why things like tax incentives, the zoning changes, other policy changes are trying to nudge folks toward reusing those parking lots or putting up buildings where there aren't buildings.
That is so helpful to know, because I have long wondered about that property too, like, why don't we have high-rise buildings here? Yeah, the Merrill Field thing, that's an important point. We are going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Mayor Suzanne LaFrance and Chief Sean Case. Vice Chair Brawley has to leave for another meeting, but thank you so much for your time and being with us today. We'll be sure to have you come back. Stay with us for the last part of Talk of Alaska as we take a short break. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're going to go to the emails in just a moment, but Mayor LaFrance, you wanted to add some context to the Northway Mall property question.
Yes. Thank you, Lori. And just to the caller's question around housing, I want to say that there's a lot of enthusiasm around converting old structures into housing, or even adding other layers. And that's one of the areas where we're looking at. We're working with developers, builders to identify roadblocks. I mean, one of the issues is that when people live in a space, the the code requirements, the safety requirements, whether it's fire code or egress, are different. And so we want to make sure as we cut red tape, we keep the stuff that ensures that people are safe, but at the same time, you know, we want to have as much flexibility to do these kinds of projects that the caller was talking about, though the Northway Mall may not be the right location for that kind of project.
Sounds like it. Yeah. But it's good to have that context. Here's an email from Bree who says, I would love to see Anchorage begin to think of itself as a winter city. Thinking of itself as a winter city would shift how it designs public spaces, housing, economic opportunities, thereby better aligning and enhancing its cold northern climate. For instance, recently I was a member of the Town Square Park Planning Committee, the firm tasked with creating the initial design and facilitating public participation, produced an initial design that highlighted 15-plus scenes from the newly designed Town Square Park. All but one of the images showed it in the summer. The one winter scene was someone ice skating. It's easy to design spaces for sunny and warm weather, but why is Anchorage designing a space that would be utilized for 2 months out of the year? We need to do better drawing from thousands of examples across the circumpolar north region of ways communities are utilizing spaces in the snow and cold to bring community members together. This is an interesting point, and I think there is a lot of potential there as the lower 48, some places get hotter and hotter, and people are looking for either relief or for winter activities. Have you thought about leaning into that narrative?
Yes, this is such a great point, and I really appreciate the specific feedback around Town Square Park. We did restart the ice rink in Town Square Park, and you know, that was exciting to see that activation. But I agree, there's more that we can do to really lean into those assets, and winter is a big chunk of the year. We're talking with folks like at the Fur Rondi, and I know they've got the Fat Tire event and running the reindeer. And, you know, there are other kinds of activities like the tour of Anchorage that gets people out on the ski trails. But I think there is, and the lagoon, the ice skating there, you know, draws a lot of folks. But I think there is a lot more that we can do. And we're looking at ways in which we can enhance that piece and work with partners to make it happen.
All right. Chief Case, when you and I talked yesterday, I mentioned the downtown foot patrol officers that used to go through the bars downtown, just putting eyes on partiers to remind them not to drink and drive, but also to be there as a resource for people who may need them. Do you see something like that coming back in some form in the future?
Yeah, and the CSOs are also going to complement that as well. You know, there's several things that we're doing throughout the police department where adding force multipliers, the community service officers is one of them. Mobile intervention team is made up of police officers as well as clinicians. Our HOPE team is made from an officer and a case manager. And so adding CSOs to the impact team, that's going to allow foot patrol to come back, not only the use of officers, but also the use of our non-sworn staff. And really staffing is one of the limiting factors that we saw that be phased out. And so as we try to build up our sworn numbers, which takes about a year from the time of hire to when they're out on the street actually taking calls for service, so that takes time. And although we have a full academy currently right now and we're looking really good for our December academy, the impact is down the road. Now, using our non-sworn staff is much more of an immediate impact. So we recently graduated an academy that had 5 weeks of field training. And so all of those CSOs are now out in the field working in a very compressed time compared to what you would see with officers.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Rich is in Sitka. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Lori. I lived in Anchorage for about 4 years and gave up on it. And the reason I gave up on it, and this is a question of how to fix it, I thought Anchorage was a town with a lot of boosterism, but not a lot of civic pride in our neighborhood, at least, which was Midtown. For instance, people didn't shovel their walks. Once, when a drain was jammed up with ice, my kid and I went out with a pick and cleaned it and drained it so that people wouldn't slosh or slide. But, you know, people just kind of looked at it as if we were nuts. I found that there wasn't that spirit of pulling together and doing something when the city doesn't do it that I found in other places, especially winter cities like Duluth or Minneapolis where I've lived. I live in Sitka now, but I just wonder, what can Anchorage do to address that The downtown partnership was a great start in downtown because initially downtown wasn't shoveled out either. And it's not just about shoveling. It's just about what can we do to instill pride over boosterism in Anchorage?
All right. Thanks, Rich, for the question. Mayor LaFrance.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rich, for that perspective. And I like that you gave the example of the Anchorage Downtown Partnership, and they do, you know, such great work to enhance downtown and our whole community. And that issue of civic pride is so important and pulling together. And I hear from people who say, like, we want to be more engaged. What can we do? And one example that we have that I think is a good blend of, you know, local government and just individuals taking initiative is our, like, Beyond the Beige. Mm-hmm. You know, there's kind of a thing, keep Anchorage beige. And if you look around, we do have a lot of beige buildings. And, you know, folks have said to me, like, we want to be more vibrant. We want to be more colorful. What can we do? And so we took an amount of our mayor's art grants and put them specifically towards Beyond the Beige. The Anchorage Community Development Authority, ACDA, also brought some money forward for that. And so there will be some murals and other artworks out there to add more color. And at the same time, we had this grassroots group of people say, like, hey, you know, we want to have a mural downtown. And they totally took the initiative to pull volunteers together. ACDA provided some support, and they worked with Rhonda Scott to put up two murals on 6th Avenue. And they did that on their own, coordinating, and there was a lot of volunteerism there. And my experience is, too, that sometimes people don't see what's possible. And especially with our limited resources as a local government, the more that people are willing to do and take initiative for, the more that really can lift up our community.
Kind of spark that engagement and get people interested in doing more things. Another question here in our final couple of minutes. This is Sarah saying, I'm emailing from Anchorage. I believe one of the most important things we can improve to attract young families is affordability of childcare and childcare resources. Such an important point. Mayor, what's on the docket for that?
Well, thanks to the voters, the cannabis tax revenues, which are about $7, $8 million a year, are now set aside to advance and promote early education, childcare in our community. We know that childcare, quality childcare, is hard to find. It's expensive. It's a major economic issue. And so our intent and the board that manages that fund is to look at ways that we can leverage that money and make childcare more accessible to folks and stabilize that segment of the economy as well.
What are the fun things that the two of you would like to see for Anchorage in the next couple of decades? More ice cream shops, a roller coaster, water skiing on Cook Inlet? What do you think could, what's the possibilities here for fun? Chief Gaze?
Sure. And I think the last caller kind of leads into what I'm kind of leaning to, and that is, you know, the involvement in government and neighborhoods. That really is how government can be involved in kind of that civic involvement. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had the members of what are now becoming our impact team. The mayor was out in North Mountain View with us, and we were painting, you know, children's equipment and dugouts for, you know, some of the, you know, just kind of area challenges that they've had in the Davis Park area the last couple of years. And when you're involved in those types of things, as the government, as a police department, as Parks and Recs, you know, it's not just the police department that's involved in these efforts. Over time, it brings the community out. They start to take pride in those areas. It builds the relationship between government and the communities. And so, you know, when I think of Anchorage out into the future, I refer to it in the police department as mowing lawns and painting fences. It's not traditional police work, but it's public safety work. And that really ties the community together, and we have a huge involvement in that.
All right. How about you, Mayor LaFrance? What are you hoping for more fun in the future?
Well, I have to say, Chief, that's such a great example. And, you know, when we did a particularly big camp abatement. When we got to the cleanup part, which involved, you know, Parks and Recs folks, it also involved members of the community, members of a disc golf group who really wanted to help restore and revitalize that space. I love trails. I want to see more interconnection. I want to see the long trail connected. Love the restaurants here. Love all the events we have. More activation, more vibrancy, more shops.
Less beige.
Less beige. That's true.
All right.
One of the best kept secrets of the world, Anchorage.
I agree. Thank you so much to our guest today, Anchorage Mayor Suzanne LaFrance, the Chief of Anchorage Police, Sean Case, and previously we had Anchorage Assembly Vice Chair and West Anchorage Rep Anna Brawley on with us. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde. Our producer is Madeline Rose. Our editor is Annie Feit, and on the phones, Ava White helped us out today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.